Hello, everyone. It's Crystal here, one of your hosts for IATSE891's podcast, Applebox Talks. It's been nearly 2 years since we released an episode of the podcast, and for many of us, a lot has changed in that time. Our industry, our people, have come through an incredibly challenging 2 years, and now we take stock of how we want to move forward with this work in the future. We're hoping to release Season 2 of Applebox Talks in 2025. Season 1 introduced you to some of the creative artists and technicians that make up the membership here and gave you a peek behind the curtain with our episodes focused on helping those new to the industry learn more about what it means to be a part of our local. In Season 2, we want to take a step back, looking more broadly at IATSE 891's role in both the motion picture industry and the greater labor movement here in BC. We're really excited about the upcoming interviews and the stories we will get to share with you in 2025. In the meantime, we've gone back to our archive and edited 6 previously unaired episodes from Season 1, and we'll be releasing those monthly for the rest of 2024. Since they were recorded in 2022, there are a few dated references, but there's still some excellent stories for you. So until we see you fresh again in 2025, pull up an Apple Box and let's talk. IATSE 891 presents Applebox Talks,
the podcast where we get to talk to the very best in entertainment, the artists and technicians of IATSE 891.
From prep to post and everything in between, we create worlds on screens of all sizes.
Welcome to Applebox Talks. I'm Hillary.
And I'm Crystal, and this week we're joined by the department who curls the locks and shapes the wigs, with credits to their names such as Red Riding Hood, A Series of Unfortunate Events, Schmigadoon, and the Emmy Award-winning Door to Door.
With us today is hair department member Julie McAfee, so let's pull up an Apple Box and let's talk. Welcome, Julie.
Hi, everybody. I'm just thrilled to be here, actually. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you for coming in. So talk to us about your job. Describe what it is, the hair department, and your role.
Oh, that's such a huge question. But we basically are in charge of every head of hair that is in front of the camera. And that's kind of the most general way I can describe it. But it's so much bigger than that because there is a script and there are producers and actors who all have ideas of what those characters are to look like. And that's where the prep comes in. And then I hire people to help me and we break down a script and we get the cast and we decide what hairdo that person's going to have. And we buy wigs and order wigs and prep and meet the cast and figure it all out slowly but surely.
And how big a role does hair play in the actual formation of the character?
I think it's pretty huge. I've watched actors sit in my chair and as the hair, you know, is designed or becomes that look on their head, they come alive, the character sort of comes out of them. So I really enjoy that aspect. I enjoy the fact that I see that character come together and it right in front of their eyes and my eyes. And I love that creative part of it.
What kind of experience did you bring with you into the film industry?
Zero. Absolutely zero experience. Actually, that's not true. I had worked in a salon for, probably 5 years between when I first went to school and when I left the salon for my first day on a film set. There was 5 years. So I brought with me the cutting skills, the coloring skills, the styling skills, the blow drying skills, but that's about it. And that's probably 20% of what you do in film hair.
So what's the other 80%? Because you've already described more skills than I have for all my own personal hairdressing. but what's the other 80% made up of?
Wig work, applying wigs, being creative, making someone look horrible, making someone look like a creature, making someone look like it's 1950s, 1940s, the period hair, stunt work, stunt doubles, creating wigs that go on stunt doubles, photo doubles, then there's the whole sort of business side of it, the paperwork, the politics, dealing with meetings, dealing with producers, dealing with actors, running a team, running a huge team. Some of the shows I've done, I've had 20 hairdressers under me. running all that smoothly so that everybody feels they have purpose, and delegating. That's something that I've kind of learned more and more how to do as I've gotten older in the business, is to delegate, because I can be quite controlling of everything, but I can't do it all, especially on big shows. So making sure that I hire a team that has diverse skills. If I have somebody that I hire that I know is really good at the computer work, then I hand off some of that. Now we do a lot of online work, more so than we ever did. We all are paperwork, everything is submitted, so you really have to be computer friendly. It's massive, actually. I think people who come in the business don't really realize what we do.
We actually hear that from a lot of different departments, which is kind of why we're doing this podcast and have ourwork.ca to kind of like dispel any sort of myths surrounding everyone's department. And, you know, people that are on set sometimes have no idea what the carp shop that's offset is doing, or, you know, paint or prosthetics, et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm. Actually, my mother still says to me, how do you do hair for 12 hours a day? And I say, well, I'm probably doing hair 4 of those 12 hours of the day in total.
And then, so what do you do when you're actually on set? Because there's a difference between your prep with an actor in the trailer and then the activities you do when you're actually on set, right?
The on set part is, you really have to pay attention. It's about making sure that the hair stays the same from shot to shot, which is what we call continuity, hair continuity, you know, matching, understanding that they've come in the door from another particular place. We shoot out of order, so we have to make sure that we keep notes on what scene they've just come from, what they looked like. We take pictures, we match that shot, you know, because we'll shoot the outside scene 2 weeks ago in the woods and now we're in the studio and they come in the door. We have to make sure that that hair matches exactly when it comes in the door from what we had 2 weeks ago outside. And that doesn't just mean where the hair is lying on the shoulders or how the bangs are sitting. It also means the growth of the hair, the color of the hair that has grown out. So therefore we have to maintain the hair length. So we do what we call dusting haircuts, which is taking a little tiny minute off every week. Maybe on a man, we'll cut his hair. If it's a buzz cut, we'll cut every 2 days, you know, just to make sure it stays the same. So there's that part of it. And then it's just standing by and paying attention to the shots, making sure that your name is, if it's called out by a producer or director, that you're there and you can step in quickly and that you're positive about how you go about your day. If you're called in, you know, yep, coming in, absolutely. Those are the positive words I like to use. I always make sure my team knows to use positive words when they are on set, because I don't like when a producer will say, can you make that bigger? And you're like, oh, okay. You know, it's all about the response. They don't want to hear negative answers. So I think as I've gotten deeper in this business over the years, I find I have more of a positive attitude. I actually really enjoy it more than I did many years ago. And I think that's just because I've changed my attitude. I'm more mature. I've had a lot more life experiences. I have a lot more appreciation now for what I do.
And you've had quite a long career through the motion picture industry. This is long hours, hair and makeup are often first on the scene and last to leave. How have you found balance in how you've done this as a career?
We're supposed to have balance. I'm not sure if I figured that one out yet. I have a very supportive husband who, when I met, I was already in the business, so he didn't have to adjust to anything. When we had our son together, I went back to work. He was a stay-at-home dad for probably 10 years, so that really, really helped. We never had to pay for childcare. I never had to worry about what was going on at home. We also, in those days, didn't have smartphones where we could be sent videos of our children in the day, which I see now happening all the time, which I'm envious of. But so a very supportive husband. I don't know, I just surround myself with, on my team, with people I really enjoy, people that I have respect for and that are funny. I like to have fun. I don't take this business super seriously. I take it seriously, just the producers who are listening to this, I do, I am. But I also... I find that there has to be fun in a day, and I think that gives me balance. I'm trying to figure out how to eat properly on set. That still is a problem, but I know that it's really, really important on how we eat. I've never managed to keep myself super fit or trim in the 35 years I've been in the business, but then the other side of it is I've let go of that a bit and kind of just went, I am what I am. I think our gear is better. We have computers and laptops and pads that make things so much easier. I don't know. I find that if I switch my team off in the rain, we just find balances in many different ways that keep everybody happy. I just want to make sure that my team is happy.
And you touched on something really important with your family dynamic. You are a working mother and your child got to see that growing up. Can you talk to us about how you balance that and, you know, the importance of that to you?
The importance of that is that my son, who is 22 now, has grown up with his father raising him at home. Now, that being said, I have been home months and months at a time, which I think is a little bit different than people who have regular 9-to-5 jobs. When I am home, I'm sometimes home for 2 months and he gets full on mom and I'm baking cookies and, you know, folding laundry. So he does see that side. But in general, he's been raised with his father cooking and cleaning and, you know, taking care of him. And my son is a very well-adjusted 22-year-old who can make an incredible meal, does his own laundry, is positive and fit, and has had, you know, relationships with girls, women who he treats very well. I admire my son because he is very rounded, and I maybe can take slight responsibility for that. And he respects his mother because he knows that, you know, I have to get up and go to work, and if I'm not around, he can take care of himself, which is a good thing, I think, as we should raise our men that they know how to do laundry. That's all I can say to you women out there who are still doing your children's laundry as a teenager. You should not.
And he got to come to sets and be on sets and see what mom does.
He actually came quite a bit, especially if we were shooting in my neighborhood of North Vancouver. He would come, and a lot of the crew are fantastic with each other's children. There was one shot he pulled focus on, it was a wide shot, and the camera guy let him pull focus because he's very interested in cameras, and he loves to come in the trailer, in the hair makeup trailer. He loves to meet the actors. He's sat and watched me do an actor's hair. He has interest in film. I don't know if he'll pursue it because I think the other side of it is he's seen the hours and what it can do to you. So maybe that isn't for him, but yeah, he has been to set a lot. Even at the age of 3, 4, I mean, I did Freddy versus Jason, and he must have been, I think, about 4 then. And I still remember him coming around the corner and bumping right into Robert Englund in his full Freddy costume. And I don't know if everyone's ever seen Robert Englund being interviewed, but he's the nicest, nicest man, you know, with a gentle, gentle soul. And so here's this full costume prosthetic makeup, and he bumps into me and my son, and he's just like, "Hi, Mac," and he bends down and shakes his hand. And I just remember the look in my son's face at 4. He was just looking up at this creature and was so scared, but the voice sort of calmed him down. So there's been lots of moments where he's seen things on sets most people wouldn't get to see.
Cool mom on the block. Yeah. You referenced Schmigadoon when you came in earlier. Can you talk to us about how it seems like your interest really started with comedies, sketch comedies like SNL, and how that kind of came full circle for you with Schmigadoon?
Well, I am a Saturday Night Live fan, and I probably started watching that when I probably shouldn't have been watching it, but as a very young girl, 12 or 11 when the season first started, huge fan. And then just last year, I got to do a Lorne Michaels produced show with a Saturday Night Live cast of Cecily Strong and Fred Armisen, and so that was kind of my dream job. And I do love comedy, and on that show it was kind of period comedy and directed by Barry Sonnenfeld, who I had worked with on A Series of Unfortunate Events, which is was another great show to work on. But I had a moment in time where I got to do hair for a Saturday Night Live sketch, which was just like, I couldn't even believe that I was doing it. But because Cecily Strong was with us and she couldn't fly back and forth, so we did a remote filming of her that was inserted into a Saturday Night Live sketch. And I got to do her hair, and the hairdresser on the show sent me the wig, and we were texting back and forth, and we went and filmed it on a Saturday. And it was a fabulous experience because all of the Saturday Night Live team were there by satellite version. They were all, you know, on phones and talking and consulting, and Cecily shot the bit. And then that night it was in the episode. And that was one of the small thrills of my life, to be part of Saturday Night Live and to say that I had done hair for that show, even though it was probably a, you know, 30-second spot. But I was very proud of that. And then also Schmigadoon was a huge production that was period, musical, dancing, comedy, funny. Lorne Michaels produced, huge cast of Broadway performers. Broadway was dark at that point, so we had access to all the best dancers, performers, and it was an amazing experience for me. I don't know if you've seen Schmigadoon, but it's worth having a look at it. It's on Apple.
Do you have a bit of a fangirl moment? I love Cecily Strong.
Yeah.
She seems like the person you want to go have a glass of wine with at the end of
Absolutely,
the night.
Absolutely, yeah. She is amazing. Very down to earth. Everybody was. Kristen Chenoweth, very down to earth. Keegan-Michael Key is probably one of my most favorite, probably in my top five of my career now. Just lovely, lovely people. Alan Cumming was in it. It was a great experience. I had a huge team too. So I had a full team doing my dancers, my background, and they were even kind of at a separate location from me. So I didn't even go to where they were working. They were just doing their thing, and they would show up all done. And yeah, it was a wonderful experience.
And it's such a position of trust that you're in with the actors and actresses when you're right there with them when they're not in character yet. Like, you're such a big part of them being ready, performance ready. Can you describe what that's like coming into the trailer, especially maybe for a new person who might be a bit starstruck?
I try to ease into it slowly. So I'll try to open the communication up before the day I meet them, unless they're not that there are small parts, but unless it's somebody just playing a 1 or 2 day role. But even then I pre-contact them by text, ask them to send me a photo of themselves. But if it's a bigger role, there's plenty of contact made before and discussion, and sometimes even head measurements taken either in Los Angeles or New York. I've made contacts with people kind of all over now that can meet a cast member for me and measure their heads. Wig makers that can make things. So that's a lot of the setup. And by the time that I meet them, hopefully we've already discussed what we're doing and we have everything we need already. And we've had even Zoom meetings with cast member now, or FaceTime calls where I talk to them about what I'm planning on doing. Photos and images are sent to them with where we're going. And if they're into it, they usually just go, great, go for it. You know, especially if it's character driven. I was very fortunate. That's a weird thing to say. I was very fortunate on Unfortunate Events. But when I did a series of Unfortunate Events, the second season, when we started, most of the cast members could see the first season. So they already knew the way the show looked. So when they came on board, they would just sit in our chair and say, have at me, do whatever you need to do. They didn't hold back in any way. They just saw the wig and it was some goofy thing and they went, go for it. And that was really, really fun because that meant they trusted us because they had seen the show. Mm-hmm. And that's a really nice feeling when no one sort of like puts their foot down and tries to fight you on what you want to do.
You know, I think you've mentioned something that's really a skill building sort of element of what you do as a head of department, the contact that you make with the actors ahead of time. And that's not something someone tells you to do. That's something you initiate yourself to do, because there are so many different types of hair and so many different types of folks that you work on. It's really important to actually smooth that pathway out. And so How many different types of hair, of texture, of, you know, skill set have you had to sort of apply?
Well, every single type, actually. But I also now know that I can't do everything. I will admit, I'm not going to be pretending I know how to do something I don't know how to do. So I'm very honest with the fact that if there's something I don't know how to do, then I will hire somebody that does know how to do that. And we have discussions, my team and I, at the beginning, and hey, who's best at this? Who's best at that? Who wants to take on that? So hopefully everything's covered. I do a lot of wig heavy shows, so therefore what hair they arrive with is sort of irrelevant because we're covering it, but we also have to just match, you know, the look and the texture and the color. So I don't know, I just, maybe the answer to that question is I just make sure I have a team that's very well-rounded that can do things I don't know how to do. Yeah. I'm not going to pretend, you know, that's, my honesty is really important here, because there's nothing worse than, you know, trying to do something you don't know how to do and then failing because you pretended you knew how to do it.
Yeah. You know, that's the mark of a great head of department, though, because we've had a person after person sitting in this chair saying the exact same thing you're saying right now, surrounding yourself with people who have diverse skill sets that you might not know and admitting when you don't know something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, what's the point of lying there? I mean, it's just going to show.
Yeah.
I think one thing I learned in some of these interviews and some of the research is really how much wig work is involved and how little of what you see on screen is growing out of an actor's actual head. Can you talk about some of the really wig heavy shows you've done?
Pretty much all of them. I mean, once in a while I'll get a show that is light, you know, maybe Cops or something easier. And it's kind of fun to have something light once in a while, but it's not where I sort of tend to steer myself. I like the really creative ones. I like the fact that I'm taking a head of hair and, you know, shading in areas and getting rid of gray or adding in gray, or these are all the things that you would never know how to do in a salon. We can add in, you know, fake hair and weft of hairs and paint hairlines in that look real. It may not always be a wig, but making someone look bad, you know, those are all the little creative things that I love.
And you worked on Watchmen, is that correct?
Watchmen, I was the assistant on that. There were probably 20 of us, so I was one of them. It was a big, big show. I do have a a story from that movie that a lot of my peers have heard me tell that's quite funny, because it sort of shows you how unglamorous this business is. And I was watching the actress Malin Ackerman in that movie. I didn't do her wig application, but I would take care of her on set. And there had been sort of a miscommunication with her wig and the costume that was built when she was in her superhero costume. The costume was very, very staticky. And so the hair, when it rubbed on the costume, the hair would just go straight up in the air, like when you touch those static balls. Do you remember? Have you ever seen those? So there was no way to change it at that point, just because it was already designed. And so I just stood by her every minute with a brush and a can of static guard. And every take, every fight scene, I was right there taking down the static. So then we cut to a day where she's riding in the owl ship, which is on a gimbal. It has a little bridge to get to. The bridge gets pulled away. The owl ship is rocking and rolling, and the camera is on a crane outside the window of the owl ship. So she's about to get into this ship. They're about to pull the gate away, and I kind of approach the first AD and say, her hair is just going to be a complete static mess. And he goes, well, you're getting in the ship. So if you watch that movie, there's a shot, one shot from the front, where I am tucked down behind the bucket seat, the driving seat of that owl ship. And I am literally on the floor, crunched up in a ball, as that ship is being rocked and rolled on a gimbal. And I'm holding on for dear life with my hairbrush and my can of static guard. And I was so happy when they called cut and said, okay, we've got that, and I could get off of the ship. But that's just an example of, you know, how unglamorous it can be sometimes, where you don't know what your job is going to involve in a day. And I mean, there's probably many times when I've watched movies and gone, I'm behind that tree. Yeah. I'm over there. I'm standing up there. I'm beside that, you know. So we have to hide sometimes.
And just for anyone who doesn't know what a gimbal is, it's a giant platform that moves sort of from side to side or back and forth or whatever, with the owl ship in this case anchored down to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it, you know, gives it the illusion that it's moving.
That it's flying, yeah.
I also worked on Watchmen, and I remember that owl ship.
Because yeah, it was beautiful.
We had to ship the owl ship, and it weighed a ton. So getting it through customs, etc., that was fun times.
I love that story, because I feel like it highlights, when we talk to people who don't know much about the industry, they immediately think actor, director, camera. And they don't see that for every person who's there, there's another 30 people behind them making it happen. And it just highlights to me that collaboration and that willingness of you to be tucked in behind a seat with your brush and your static gun to make sure that everyone else looked good.
Well, let's not say willing, because I was I wasn't really willing, but I was kind of told I had to, so I did. But now it's a funny story that I can tell, and I can tell a lot of people who come in the business starting out that that's, you know, one of the many weird, funny moments that I've had my 35 years of doing this. So there's probably quite a few more of those.
And you were in Watchmen.
I was in the movie, yeah, behind the chair. You can't see me, but I'm there.
So can you think of anything outrageous that you've been asked to do hair-wise that you were like, maybe we shouldn't do that, or you were like, okay, I'm doing this.
There's so many of them, but then they all don't seem so crazy anymore because it's just sort of the norm to do that crazy.
Yeah, because you get you know, handed a drawing or something, mm-hmm. and you just go, okay, yeah, I can do this and this and this and this. Like, we do everything.
Yeah. I mean, I'm starting a project right now. I'm in prep, and I have some weird things I have to do right now, and I'm talking them over with my team. Like, I'm literally saying, okay, here's the image. How do you guys feel we should do this? How should I do this? This is what I'm thinking in my head as I lay in bed at night and do hair, because I do that. You know, I think about how I'm going to do it. And, you know, I'd sketch it out on a piece of paper, and then my team, my artistic team of people will say, no, I think you should, you know, add it in this way. And hey, what if you do it this way? And then we talk it through. And thank God I'm not doing these movies on my own, because I need people to talk to about things. You know, I can't make sometimes a decision solely on my own. I want to hear the other options. And I think that's really important. So,
you know, your department can pretty well do anything when asked.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, burning someone's hair off, maybe someone who just got exploded on, that can be hard. But then again, you just burn a wig and put it on them. So, and then makeup takes over from there. You know, receding hairlines has to be fully bald capped underneath. And then you put a wig on top of that. And so there's always a way to do something. It just requires sometimes a few people to do it and a few people to discuss it and design it.
I'm curious, what's the difference with film and episodic television, when the character arcs are longer? Like, hair is such a part of people's character that we don't necessarily always think of as, in an isolated way, but as a character grows and develops, maybe their hair changes, or that's part of a story arc that they do some big dramatic haircut, or is there a big difference
between film and television?
Right.
There used to be a big difference, and we used to think that film was, you know, more prestigious, but these days films are shot for streaming services now. So everybody's watching these films that we're making that are feature films on their giant TV sets in their house. So it's all kind of the same. And then the other side of that is television has become so huge. Some of the best scripts, some of the best shows are now television shows that have huge epic period hair and makeup, you know, Game of Thrones and The Crown. And these are TV series that are shot like features. So I don't say I exclusively do features. I do everything. And I try to take it by what the project is offering me as far as the creativity. So I don't think there's any difference. I mean, yes, there still is big, huge feature films that are in the theaters, and they're usually predominantly action movies. So they are, yes, massive, and they do require a massive team and massive units. But I'm not always drawn to those massive films. I take it for what the actual craft will be that I'm doing and who I'm working for. You know, I always say that when I go in on a job interview and they're meeting me, I'm meeting them too. And how they treat me on that interview and how they respect me or how they talk to me might be an example of how they're going to treat me through the whole movie. So, you know, there probably has been a one or two situations where I've met somebody and actually walked out of there and they hired me, but I pulled out because I didn't like the way they treated me. So I don't know. It's not based on feature or television anymore. It's just on what work is being offered to me, who I'm working with, who I respect, how much money they pay me, maybe. But I have, you know, in the last few years, taken on a little tiny movie that offered me way less because I liked the script and it fit nicely in between two other shows. So I'm doing some independent movie for half the money, but it was a great story and a great script. So it isn't even about money. It's about people. If I were to retire, I think I would miss the people. I always say it's like childbirth. You forget the bad stuff, right? You only, if I have memories of each show, it's always some laughing moment or some dance party in the trailer or, you know, some incredible story somebody was telling me and we're all laughing or we're all hanging out or little images of that, not the bad things.
Let's talk about the trailer for a second here. So your relationship with the makeup department is so tight and intertwined. You often share a trailer?
Yeah, the show I'm starting right now is the first show that I'm actually in a separate trailer as department head with my makeup designer that I always usually work with. But this is the first show that we're in separate trailers. So it's going to be different because we'll be in and out of each other's trailer all the time. There's a concept that sometimes gets drawn up and we talk it through together of what we're going to do and where the lines cross between sideburns and hair and what coloring we're going to use and if there's a prosthetic underneath the hair. And so, yeah, we work together very tightly. You have to have respect for your partner and you have to have fun.
So you approach that relationship sort of as a symbiotic one.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So I know if I think about salons and the environment that people are usually associating hairstylists with, that's not usually how you find yourself on set. What's some of the strange places that you've been called upon to do hair?
Oh, snowy top mountains, you know, which involve helicopter rides to get there. I was the assistant hairdresser on Alive in 1992. And that movie was, you know, helicopter rides to the top of a mountain every day. And then you'd get out with your hair kit and do hair in the snow. Boats. I did one of the Free Willy movies. You know, that was what we referred to as the summer camp movie. So we were on boats every day out in the middle of the ocean where base camp was on a barge. So we would, you know, park our cars at crew park on land, get in a boat and ride to the base camp on a barge. So, and then every day you'd get on another boat and go out and shoot boat to boat, kind of leaning over the edge of a dinghy to touch up another actor who's, you know, either riding on the top of a whale or a robotic whale or something like that. So over high rises, leaning out the edges of sides of buildings to touch somebody up, you know, climbing up giant rock sets. I was just in Newfoundland recently and we had extreme locations there. We were, you know, climbing up cliffs to get up to the top. Anywhere, you name it, I've probably done hair in the weirdest places. Weird, disgusting old buildings downtown where you're stepping over rat poo and you know, like weird, weird places.
Has it taken you international?
I have not done too much international. A lot of my peers have. It just hasn't happened for me. And not that I'm longing for it or maybe because I didn't want to travel as much, so I didn't make it happen because I had, you know, children.
But that kind of goes to show just the quality of work that is right here in town and the breadth of work you can get across television and feature films. And as you say, it's all the same now with streaming.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I'm busy. I work when I want to work and I seem to be kind of always working. So I feel fortunate.
I mean, I'm sure people line up to get advice from you at this point in your career.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, I have had day calls or new younger people to the business come out. They're either nervous to meet me or say some very lovely things when they meet me, like they'd heard, you know, my name before or they were excited to work with me. Or I've had people text me and say, hey, you haven't met me before, but I really want to work with you. And I will take those people on, you know, if they're in the union and ready to go. And it's a small business. We can talk to each other. We can find out, you know, about other people and who they've worked with. And, you know, yeah, I've met so many great new hairdressers that are wonderful, who I welcome their experience to teach me things too. They like to hear the stories. And someone said to me once, don't tell them stories about something from 89, you know, it just makes yourself seem older. And I'm like, but no, I want to, you know. So
those stories are so important though. And this is what I love about this podcast is that we get to really kind of show our appreciation to those people who have built this industry to what it is today. And for the newer folks coming in, you know, they get in a little quicker. you know, they get on bigger mm-hmm. shows a little faster. They move up faster just for the nature of how much production we have here. And it's good for them to be aware of how much it actually took to get to this point.
Absolutely. I mean, it took me, my first day on a set was on a TV series called Wise Guy. And I got that day call in 1986. And I came right from the salon and I got called from the union hall and I went out. There was probably enough crew then to shoot three projects, if you think about that. So maybe 500 people in the union. How many people in our union now?
Well, if you count the permittees and retirees, there's 15,000.
15,000. Yeah. So I seem to recall the number 500, 600 about being the number when I got in. I got in at number 12 in the hair department. Mm-hmm. I've moved up a bit now. I think I'm four, but thank God nobody's died. It's just been retirement. Mm-hmm. The thing that sort of irritates me a little bit about what you just said, Crystal, was because they move in fast, sometimes there's an attitude that comes with that. Like there's this sort of eagerness to get in. And then once you're in and you're working on movies, there can sometimes be an attitude. And that's, I'm in the business. Now I had it too. I remember having that attitude probably in the 90s. I was probably a little bit more difficult, but you come full circle where you find yourself truly grateful that you're doing this and that there are many people standing behind me who want my job and who could do it equally as well as me for sure. And, so I think there's a kind of a humbleness that maybe happens and a gratefulness, and that's where I'm at now. And I think that may be responsible for a little bit for why I get hired a bit more, because I come in with a kind of an attitude that is maybe accommodating or grateful to be there. And when I encounter younger, newer members with attitude, I want to talk to them.
Yeah, have a word.
Yeah.
Like if and people, that's important too, right?
Yeah. Like when people do come and work for me and I see it, I will sort of say, hey, you know, we don't talk to people like that. Or I mean, especially nowadays, geez, I came in the business when it was full on abuse. Yeah. It was full. You know, I've had my ass grabbed by actors. You know, there's been lots of things that have happened that just don't happen anymore and are not acceptable. But yeah, I just try to sort of, I hopefully lead by example. So if someone is working for me and they see how I talk to a producer or an actor, then maybe they'll learn from that. And if they go on another show and work with somebody else who doesn't talk that way, maybe they'll remember that's not how you do it. I don't know. There's just no room for attitude.
Yeah. And that's part of the mentoring that has to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, not everyone's going to just be mentored and do everything correctly. You're going to make mistakes and you have to be open to constructive criticism, mm-hmm. as in anything in life, right?
It's 50% skill, 50% personality in this business. Mm-hmm. So you have to be accommodating and kind and respect the PA that's standing by your car. Because I will tell you right now that PA that parked my car in 1986 is now an executive producer on a show that I'm, you know, like, or a PM. And they will remember mm-hmm. that you were, you know, super nice to them when they were a PA. I've had first ADs say to me, oh my God, I worked with you. I was a PA on that show. And you were the only one that spoke to me, you know. So
I'm one of those people. Because I worked with you on Watchmen and I remembered how engaging you were and how you asked people how their day was, how things were going. And I was one of those people when I was assisting producers.
Wow.
So.
Well, that was a hard show for me too. Like I went home in tears a few nights, right? So if I was like that then, wow.
Yeah.
No, it was good. That was a hard show. But yeah, that's my thought on this business. If I went to work every day bitter and angry, then I wouldn't even be here. 35 years later, like I love it more now than I did then. And weirdly enough, it doesn't feel as hard. I'm 58 now. I was 24 when I came in the business. It's not as hard on me anymore, maybe because I can balance out my energy or something. But I also do find that I have more energy sometimes than the 35-year-olds. Like they're moping around going, I'm so tired. And I'm like, what? Get up.
Yeah, stamina is important.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how that is, but maybe on the weekends I crash, but
I think you've highlighted the importance of that real self-awareness that's required to survive in this industry and what it means to know who you are and know what you're bringing and that ownership that you need to have.
Yeah, it seems like I feel like we've spoken today mostly about personality other than actual hair skills. But as I said, I really do feel it's 50-50, right? The skills, you can come in with basic hair skills and I'll teach you the rest. But if you don't have the right attitude and the personality for this, if you are going to complain about standing in the rain, then it might not work out for you.
Yep, because you're going to be standing in the rain. You want to be standing with someone who's okay to be there with you.
Yeah. And maybe I might put you, the younger person, in the rain and the other person I'm working with that is older and mature and been in the business longer, maybe not in the rain, and I might switch you out. But you have to be able to accept all the conditions.
So flash forward a couple of years from now. Is there anyone you'd love to work with?
I always wanted to work with Robin Williams, but I lost my chance on that. So he was kind of like my goal. I love working with the comedians. I always kind of say that I want to make them laugh. You know, if I can get the comedian to laugh. A lot of times the comedians are quite serious, actually. I don't know. I just take it year by year and whatever happens. I don't really plan for anything specific. I love it when it's somebody I've already worked with, a producer who wants to hire me back, or Barry Sonnenfeld, who I've worked with, you know, two or three times now. That makes me happy because I know, you know, what his expectations are and he knows mine. But I don't really even want to travel to Europe and shoot some epic movie in Romania. Like, I don't want to do that. But I shouldn't say I don't want to do it, because if someone wants me to invite me to do it, okay, that's fine. But I did, yeah, just day by day.
Well, the Emmys might be in your future. Again, you've attended the Emmys before.
I have.
This is like the pinnacle for a lot of people in the hair department. So can you, well, in every department, actually. So talk to us about what that was like.
I was very fortunate to be nominated for an Emmy for Outstanding Hairstylist for a TV series and miniseries, a TV special. And that was for one called Door to Door with William H. Macy and Helen Mirren. And it was shot in 2002. I won in 2003. My husband and I went, and it was just a fantastic night of everything you would think, you know, red carpets and limos and all the Creative Arts Awards are mostly the crew. It's shot separately on a different night than the actual Emmys with the actors. But you know that in that room is all very creative behind the scenes people. And there is some actors there that present. It was just a really amazing, amazing night to go. And then I won, you know, and that was unbelievable. And then you get to go behind stage and have all the pictures taken and take pictures with your holding your Emmy. And I was like my 15 minutes of fame, because when I came back to Vancouver, I got interviewed on breakfast television. I got to be on the cover of the North Shore News, because it was like North Van Girl makes it big, you know, and I got to have my picture taken there, and CBC interviewed me on the radio. So it was like a little 15 minutes of fun fame. And it was great. Yeah. And then we went more recently to the 706 Hair Makeup Guild Awards, which is in Los Angeles. And that's just the hair makeup artists. And I got nominated for a series of unfortunate events and won that one. So I got that one 2 years in a row we went. That one is really special because it's all hair and makeup artists at that award show. So it's just complete glam, full on hair and makeup, eccentric, fun people all in one room. And very supportive and just a super fun night. It's actually a two-night event, because there's an event the first night and then the awards night. So that was really fun. I took my son with me. He loved it. Those two nights were in some ways even more fun than, well, the Emmys are great, but the guilds is because it's your peers that recognize you. That felt really, really special.
And you know what I love about our members, and, you know, we talk to Jim Erickson and we talk about him because he's legendary set decorator.
I heard Jim's one.
Yeah. Oscar winner. Our folks that win these awards, you know, you go on to set with them, you work with them, unless you know their history, you'd never know it, because that's not what you wear front and center. You are just focused on your craft. You said earlier, you know what you know and you know what you don't know, and you can still rise to that level because of how you work and how you hone these skills. And it's completely agree, 50% soft skills, 50% actual skill.
Well, you can't wear your Emmy on a necklace. You know, I tried to make a necklace out of it, but it's pretty heavy and really jabby. And you can't really put it on your station because that's a bit sort of braggy. But I think it was on my station one day, maybe. But yeah, I've heard stories of peers who've won Oscars for makeup, you know, and it actually was a hindrance. They couldn't get work because everybody assumed they were too expensive now. So it doesn't make any difference. I honestly feel it doesn't. You know, even after my Emmy, it was like, oh yeah, I won an Emmy. And then it was like, okay, back to work. Didn't make a difference. So,
and the references are really from your last show, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean, now we have Zoom interviews now to get movies, which I think I've had two, and I do them in the hair makeup trailer now if I can, if I'm working on something for the next show. So I just kind of put wigs behind me in the background and I can kind of hold them up and show them in the interview and say, this is what I'm doing right now. So that kind of helps to get work. But I mean, my resume at one point, someone said, you know, you got to knock it down. It was like 7 pages. And someone said, no one cares about what you did in 94. Like all they really care about is what maybe you did in the last couple of years, as you just said, right? So you kind of have to have those up on the front and that's it.
Interview and resume tips with Julie McAfee.
Yeah, and I used to separate them. It was a time where we all had to separate our features. So the features would be at the top of your resume and you'd have the title features and then the TV series would be at the bottom of your resume and then you'd rotate it depending on what you're interviewing for. But it doesn't matter. The TV series and the features are all kind of, you know, the same in some ways. You know, the series are epic. There's series that are just harder than features, some of them. And then there's feature films that I've done that are straight to streaming Netflix, not on a big screen at all. So except for the big screen in people's living rooms.
What about Red Riding Hood? Who was the older actress who's just lovely?
Julie Christie. Yeah. She was also in The Company You Keep I did, which was the Robert Redford movie. Lovely, lovely woman. But when I emailed her and said that I was the hairdresser, she remembered me from Red Riding Hood. So that sort of made it a little easier and we could ease into her hair because she had that familiar knowledge of me. And that, I think, makes actors feel comfortable too if they come on a show and then they know the hairdresser already from something previous. And I think that's why people have personals too, because there's that comfort of knowing the person super well and they don't have to stress about a new person doing their hair.
And personals, for anyone that doesn't know, can you explain what that is?
That's when an actor just has a hair and makeup artist or two people or one person that does both and that they just do them. That's all they do.
And they follow them usually.
And they follow them around, yeah. And there are people like who've had the same hair and makeup artist for a long time because they trust them immensely.
I bet you've been asked.
I've done a few personals, but not a lot, actually. Mostly I just run the show.
Well, there's an intimacy to what you do, too, right? Mm-hmm. Being that close to someone and with them at all hours when they're not even really in character yet.
I mean, there probably has been shows where I've actually felt like a personal because I took on number one and sort of stuck with them a lot. And then I gave away number two, three, and four to my assistants. But I also have to run the show, so it's... I think there are probably some actors that require a personal because they don't want you distracted by having to run the rest of the show. They want your 100% focus. And sure, I'd love to do that. I just never wanted to travel a lot because I had children and I just didn't want to be constantly on the road and living out of a hotel room. But again, I don't want to say that I wouldn't do it.
And just for anyone listening, when Julie refers to one, two, and three, the actors are generally numbered. Mm-hmm. And so typically your star is number one and then so
for sure,
on.
Yeah.
Is there a particular genre you find the most fun?
I love period. I don't want to say I don't ever want to do something because if someone listens to this, they may not hire me on something but I've never been as fond of the science fiction. And I will say this to any of my peers. I'm not great at coming up with a hairdo that is coming out of nowhere. Like it's a creative hairdo that is just completely invented. Give me a period and we look at the photos. I can create that. So I find that a lot easier for me to do. I love the period shows. And A Series of Unfortunate Events and Schmigadoon were period, but it was an interesting thing because it wasn't locked into an absolute thing. It was an unknown period. So you had room to kind of, like a fantasy period, I guess would be the right word. So you could stretch it a little bit. So you'd have, you know, 1970s hair on a 1940s outfit or and part of the hairdo, the back of the hairdo is 1940s and the front is a little 60s. And so that's kind of creative. And when I had people coming to work for me on a series of unfortunate events, I'd say it's period. And they'd go, well, what period? And I'd go, exactly. Like, if you can do any period hair, then just blend it. And you can't go wrong as long as the women's hair are up, you know. And so I think a lot of people find that really fun. And I find that fun. So I love period work. And I specifically like 50s, 60s, 70s. 80s.
All the periods, time periods.
80s is great because I started doing hair in the 80s. So I know how to do 80s hair very well. And I remember doing some background on Hot Tub Time Machine. Remember when they shot that here?
Yep.
Very 80s. And I went out and helped and I was in the background holding and I was pumping out those big 80s hairdos because I had done them for real. I had the hair. And there were some other hairdressers in there that might have been in their 20s or 30s and they were watching me do it. And they're like, oh my God, how do you do that? You know, because they didn't do hair in that era, whereas I did. So I knew how to get the volume and the mousse and the scrunch and the, you know, the diffuser and the upside down and the hairspray. And that was the same when I got in. If I did a movie that was set in the 60s, I was a child then, but I worked with hairdressers who were since retired who could pump out the 60s because they did hair in the 60s. So I would learn from them because they were actually in the salon then doing roller sets and making these big beehive hairdos. So, I mean, every other period I just learned on set from watching other people.
Is there a movie that you didn't do hair on that you just admire that stands out to you?
Bridgerton. It's amazing. I don't know if you guys have seen Bridgerton.
Oh, yes.
Because that's period, but also fantasy period. Yep. And very creative. And we just lost the hair designer on that, actually. He just passed away. He won an Emmy in September and he died, which has just been like incredibly awful. But the projects on that were amazing. So mm-hmm. I would have loved to have watched some of that come to be, you know, full on builds.
So you make wigs from scratch?
I don't knot, like where you actually hand knot the wigs. I made a decision very early in my career that I found that very tedious and too fine detailed. You know, it's like sewing little tiny hairs into a net. So I don't do that. But when I say build wigs, it's like we will buy a wig off the rack and we'll cut it up and sew it and sew in weft and color it, alter it. Not very often will you buy a wig off the rack and have it be 100% the way it's going to be.
Yeah, this has been a fulsome interview, Jillie, and I loved your stories. Thank you so much for
my pleasure.
Lending us your knowledge and insight. It's very much appreciated.
It's been great fun, yeah.
Thank you. I learned so much from you.
Really?
Yeah,
you want to come do hair?
A little bit. I don't even know how to do my own hair, so.
You can't come then.
And that's a wrap for another episode of Apple Box Talks.
For more episodes and to find your fit in the film and TV industry, check out ourwork.ca.